The countdown is on to fight time. This is Big Fight Weekend. Now, here is your host, TJ Reeves.
Yes, here we are. It is June already. Can you believe it? And we're ready to preview the weekend as we come back in. Here is part of the Big Fight Weekend preview. I'm just the somewhat competent host. He is our insider from his Fight Freaks Unite Substack and BigFightWeekend.com. Hello, Dan Rayfield. Good to be back with you. We do have a world title fight involving Clarissa Shields to talk about. Lots of news and some good nostalgia to get to on the program. Are you in a decent mood? I know you've gotten a little cultured since the last time that you and I talked. We may or may not get into that. How you feeling? How are things?
I'm doing good. You know, you always introduce me and you always tell me you're the competent host, but you never tell our listeners your name. This is TJ Reeves.
That's correct.
A more than competent host.
Okay. I'm glad that you now perceive me after over a year of doing this about being a little more than competent or a little bit more than lucid and rested and those kind of things. It does say my name though at the beginning of the podcast. So it's just the big intro voice. And I should get the voice of thunder to say with Dan Rayfield to come back around if I pay him enough, but that's another situation, but thank you. How you feeling? You ready to go for another week and another weekend and another month?
How was I cultured?
You were cultured because you were taking in the arts with your son.
Yes.
And a performance. Are we going to get into that for a second? You were cultured this week. I was impressed. You sent me a photo.
It was a big thing. I mean, when you got a bunch of kids in elementary school and you take the elementary school band and you take the elementary school orchestra and you put them all together, like 200 kids in a big middle school gymnasium where they play basketball and everybody's parents and friends show up and they put on the spring concert, you know, a couple of weeks before the end of school, it's like a big deal. And since my son participates in the orchestra with lots of his other friends from school, we went to the concert last night and we watched all these kids. And let me tell you, I'm not just saying this as a proud dad. Those kids really, they did very well. They played nice. The band music was good. The orchestra music was good. We had a very nice time.
I love that. What does he play again for the audience? I'm just curious.
My son plays the stand-up bass, which is taller than he is at the moment.
Love that. That's outstanding. So this begs the question. I am not musically inclined in the least. I never played an instrument. You never played an instrument, nothing.
No. So when I was a kid, like in like junior high and that, I did play I played the trumpet in the school band.
Okay. So you can play a little trumpet, but he obviously,
I was not very good, by the way.
He got his musical inclination from Mrs. Rayfield. We're saying that.
No, I don't think so. I think just was interested, like, him and his kids, the kids in school were interested to do it. He came home one day and said, I'd like to do this. I've got some of my friends are doing it. Can I do this? I said, okay, it sounded good.
And he has the bass in the home where he practices, or does he only have it at school and he only practices at school? Because that's a big item to transport back.
I mean, not
forth.
To say that anybody really who's listening cares, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Most of the kids, if they're playing in the orchestra, they're playing like the violin, they're playing the cello, they're playing the viola, whatever the stuff is they play. They transport that back and forth to practice and everything. But as you said, because the bass is so freaking big, there's actually two. One is at school in the band room, and the other one is at our home in the basement that we rent that he practices on.
I love it.
What all the kids do. So we had to bring the big one to school for the actual performance.
I got you. And by the way,
it was in a different school than where he goes to school. It was in the middle school. Not the
so
elementary.
Did you put the seatbelt across the base just like a child would? Because it's a precious item there. We can't have a problem with it falling over or something in traffic. Seatbelt around the base or no?
I don't think the seatbelt was there. We kind of like, you can push the back seat forward to make the trunk larger. Able to fit it in there. And then he sat in the back seat with it to make sure everything was okay.
This is what you get on the podcast. And by the way, don't sell it short. There are a lot of people that are listening to us that have kids, that go to recitals, dance,
and
music,
by the way, this
whatever.
Also goes to show our audience that, you know, while we love and we do boxing a lot and we're really into it, and I spend an inordinate amount of my life and my day thinking about it, writing about it, talking about it, that we actually do have lives beyond the boxing business and the fights, because as we've told the fans and the listeners, you've got your twin daughters and a wife, and I've got one of my wife, and we got other stuff going on besides boxing.
No doubt about that. And by the way,
it was the big recital and everything went great.
I did share with you just one more aside. I went for the boss move. I went for the power move because my wife and my twins that are now about to be 15 years old. I can't believe that. They are going to a dance recital on Sunday. And I was able to get out of it because I paid for the upgraded tickets for them to move them closer to the stage. at some $30 a pop for this dance recital. And I got a twin telling me that their friend is not on until the final couple of acts, I guess. And they're going to have to sit there for like 90 minutes before their friend dances. Oh. But I paid Rayfield for the upgraded tickets. And I think there are a lot of males that are listening to us that are dads that can relate to this and appreciate a good boss move, which is buy them the upgraded tickets. You guys have fun. I'll be watching or playing golf. I'll be doing something else, rewatching some boxing, something coming on Sunday. So there you go. A little bit of peek inside the Reeves and Rayfield.
I did mention to my son that while I thought he did a great job in his performance and that all the kids did a wonderful job, I did say, you know, it would have been nicer if it could have been a little bit more like Kiss and we could have seen some fireworks and some fire breathing and some blood spitting, but it was all right.
Well, and by the way, I have been to these, so I can identify with you where they are just at times off key. And what do I know about music? But they're blaring the rock and roll version of something and it's off key. And you're sitting back trying to smile and go, yes, you're really good. Or except if you're not with the middle school or the late elementary school. Okay. So good stuff on that. By the way, thank you for finding us. We do preview on the weekends, overnight Thursday into Friday. We come off the weekend and recap on a Sunday night into Monday with whatever goes on the weekend with fights, results, news. So make sure that you're with us on the Big Fight Weekend podcast feed. Follow, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Dan Rayfield is insistent and may come through the microphone and smack me if I don't say rate us and review us. That does help us in the searches, in the algorithms through Apple Podcasts. Rate and review us. Give us a 5-star review. Several of you did that in the month of May. Let's get June off to a good start. Give us some good ratings and reviews. Tell us that you like us and appreciate us because, again, that helps us move up on the rankings somewhat. And more of you, again, we say thank you. More and more of you are finding us, and we love that. You'll get great conversation from us, but also newsmakers, interviews, fighters. You talked to Joe Goosen recently. We've talked to fighters like Ryan Garcia, Canelo Alvarez, and others on this feed. You get those all the time if you follow or subscribe, even beyond just the preview podcast or the recap podcast. All right. With all that being said, again, Claressa Shields will defend her undisputed women's middleweight championship in Detroit Saturday night. We will get to the preview of that fight in a little bit. Full understanding, no disrespect to Claressa. This is not a big-time massive fight. It's a late replacement opponent. We will give it its due a little later on the preview. She's expected to win. The bigger story is how big an atmosphere is it in Detroit? She's fighting downtown. We'll get to that in a little bit, but we've got some other fight news that we'll cover first, and then we'll get to that preview. Okay, so it's officially official, as official as it can be. Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford, July 29th in Las Vegas, will fight. They made that announcement, contract signed. And so now we roughly have 8 weeks until that will take place. Dan, further follow-up thoughts there?
Well, it was just, you know, last week when they went on their social media, both Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence, and told the world we're fighting and it's done and all that. And that was great. And it was like a sigh of relief slash a big cry of joy from boxing fans all around the world excited for that fight. But then it was this week on Thursday, or I guess on Wednesday, actually, where the people that actually do the paperwork and make things official and all that put out the formal announcement with stuff about tickets and all the particulars. So you have Showtime, PBC, TGB Promotions, everybody involved put out the formal press announcements, gave places to buy tickets. The pre-sale began on Thursday. We're taping this just a few hours after the pre-sale began. The public sale starts on Friday. And so now it's just another reason for us to be. I can't talk about this fight enough. So this was not unexpected, obviously. But now it's, as you said, official. And while it's not 100% scheduled yet, probably not next week, but the week after, I guess, they'll actually do a 2-city media tour where they will go and greet the media, perhaps some fans in both Los Angeles as well as in New York, where, you know, we'll get to hear from the fighters. And obviously, they'll have a lot to say about this fight in the lead up to it. And I mean, I know both guys have been already training, so it's not like they haven't been prepping for this fight already, since I think both guys had an idea that they would make the fight. And even if they didn't make the fight, they would fight somebody else. So they've been in the gym. And listen, like we talked about when they both announced it on their social media, this is such a huge fight. And I can't tell you what it will do in terms of money and pay-per-view, But every boxing fan that I have come across, encountered, interacted with in any way, shape, or form on social media, or those who go on my Substack and maybe write a comment on the bottom of a story or something along those lines, other people I know in the business who I talk to or text with or email with, every single person to a man, a woman, whatever, is very excited and can't wait for this fight. Even people that are not involved with the fight, who work for rival outlets, rival TV, rival promotions, even they're like, you know what, I'm watching this one, or, you know, I'm going to maybe try to get a ticket to that one. Everybody is excited for this fight. It's truly, like, I haven't felt this kind of, like, buzz for a fight, you know, this far out in a long time. I tell you, let's go back a number of years ago, when Canelo Alvarez and Floyd Mayweather did their fight, and they embarked on their media tour. They did a few different cities, and one of them was Washington, so I attended the media stop for that particular fight. You could just feel right away that the people that came out, that was open to the fans, free of charge to come and watch them do their press conference and talk to the fans and all that business. Everybody left with such a good feeling, and it just sort of, it was like a snowball, and everybody, wherever they went, they were excited about the fight. You know, they talked to their friend, they went to the barbershop, went to the bar, talked to their colleague, talked to their brother, their buddy, whatever. And it just created such a buzz in terms of word of mouth. I feel like this fight has a chance to maybe not at that same level of sales, but to just really stoke the interest of the mainstream sports fan. And they're off to a good start, just what I can tell in the first few days of this being done. And, you know, we got now a good 2 months to really dig our teeth into this thing and really get even more pumped up about it. I cannot wait for this fight. I'll be there in Vegas, and it's going to be a great show. I can't imagine this being a bad fight either. That's the beautiful thing. There are certain fights where you might get excited about just because it's a great matchup in terms of like the stakes there or what it means. But this obviously has that because it's all the historical elements we have already spoken about. You know, the undisputed, they're both undefeated, pound for pound supremacy perhaps. But when the bell rings, just in terms of the actual combat, I mean, it's going to be a hell of a fight. So yep. I can't wait. And anyway, it is now official. And, you know, I'm sure that those tickets will sell well. They did, you know, the tickets that went on sale, I may mention, now this is the pre-sale. So they didn't open up the entire arena. They put on certain sections.
Were you surfing around on the pre-sale, taking a look? What did you find?
I took a look. The tickets were priced from $1,505 up to $8,500, but those were certain sections and ringside. And so when the pre-sale, by the time this comes out, it'll be, most people when they hear it'll be already on Friday. So I believe it's 1 p.m. Eastern time on Friday is when the public sale begins, and they'll open up other sections, but they don't have the prices of what those are. So I can't tell you what already, you know, say like what the nosebleeds are or what the second tier level of the ticket prices are. But, you know, hopefully there's at least some tickets for, you know, normal people to be able to purchase a ticket for a decent price, you know, a couple hundred bucks and be able to get in. But, you know, I can tell you one thing, whatever the ticket prices are on this one, you know, obviously it's probably going to be a sellout. I have no doubt in my mind. It's going to be a big crowd, and it's going to be a great, like a truly great week in Vegas that week. I cannot wait.
No doubt. All right. So we're anxious for that to get underway. And again, this is a technical thing and an obvious thing. Obviously, the fighters were announcing it on social media, but you didn't get the official announcement from those parties until everybody signed everything and everything's firm, like you have always talked about, and common sense always dictates, make sure everybody's signed on the dotted line. And I do think it was interesting. One more on this, then we're going to move on. Terrence Crawford has revealed this a couple of times now in interviews, is what really put this firmly to bed here, put it into motion, and they got the agreement done, was Errol Spence stayed on the phone, kept after him on the phone. They got on the phone, and Crawford finally, I guess, felt good enough about the two or three concerns he had with Spence saying to him, Crawford, I'm paraphrasing, said, I had a couple of concerns, and Errol Spence said, this is not going to be a problem. You'll get it in writing. You'll get it in writing that is not going to be a problem. That's not going to be a problem. And they agreed. And so
I'm
going to
tell you right
now, we're good.
I mean, Errol Spence, I'm in a fortunate position, and I understand I'm in a fortunate position that while I'm a fan of watching these great athletes do their thing, and I'm a historian of boxing, I've watched boxing my entire life, I'm in a position where I've gotten a chance to meet these guys, interview them numerous times, cover their fights many, many times. And, you know, again, not like I'm best friends with them or anything like that, but have a reporter to fighter relationship where you get to know the guy. Like, they know, like, if you asked Errol Spence, and am I going to be fair when I quote him? He knows I'm going to be fair when I quote him. I don't take guys out of context. So he's comfortable. So I have a very cordial relationship in that regard with both him and with Crawford. I was actually looking at their records when I was writing something about this. I think this will be something I got to make sure my numbers are accurate, but I want to say it will be in terms of in-person, like my 10th or 11th Terrence Crawford fight. And I think my 10th or 9th Errol Spence fight. But the reason I'm saying this is when Errol stayed on top of this to make sure this fight happened in a similar manner that Ryan Garcia did with Tank Davis, and we've discussed that also, like, he's not trying to get over on Crawford. He wants the fight. So he's willing to go the extra mile to make sure it happens. And I'm going to tell you from my own experiences on a numerous different occasions about a variety of different topics, Errol Spence is just a good person, in my opinion. He's like a decent human being. Of course he's a great athlete, but he's a regular guy, puts his pants on one leg at a time. Now, I'm not even saying it's not like Crawford's a bad guy. I just feel like I know Errol a little bit better than I know Crawford. You know, Crawford, here's the kind of guy Crawford is. When Ryan Garcia made the decision to go and train with Derek James. So my question was, boy, I wonder how that happened. And when I talked to Derek James, he was like, well, he called Ryan, who was friendly with Errol, contacted Errol to get my number, meaning Derek's number, and to also make sure it was okay. Because obviously if they bring Ryan into the camp, that's kind of going on to Errol's turf. It's his gym. It's, you know, that sort of thing. They got to make sure they work together. And Errol was like fine with that. And so when that happened, I texted Errol to ask him if he would give me a comment about the fact that he was helpful to help make this marriage, if you will, between Ryan and Derek work. And he was perfectly fine. He's like, you know, here you go. Tell you this is my thoughts on it. And then we just had like a normal conversation. We weren't even talking about boxing. Like, he asked about my son. I asked about his kids. We like had a normal back and forth. Like, again, like we're best friends, but that's just the type of guy he is, that he would like, you know, we conducted our business briefly. And then he was like, hey, what's up? How's your kid doing or whatever? So I think he's just a decent human being and I like him. When Crawford says that those were the things that Errol promised that he would get taken care of, like, I believe he's a man of his word and he wasn't screwing around. That's the point where I'm going.
I believe you. And I'll just add this in because we give our comments and our commentary. This fight would have happened even a year ago because Errol Spence wanted it to happen. Terrence Crawford, for all reasons of his own, didn't want it to happen. Wouldn't agree. I'm just saying to you, the only reason why it did not happen last winter is because Terrence Crawford not only wouldn't agree, but was working another deal. Obviously, Errol Spence has wanted this fight and has said so, and I believe so, since last fall. I don't know that Terrence Crawford really wanted this fight as badly until probably now. And now he feels like it's the right time, and that's why it's getting done. But, you know, people should not have, and I don't think they do because you do a good job from the inside of saying this. This has not been that both sides couldn't agree. This has been that Terrence Crawford wouldn't agree, that it's taken this long. And so now we finally have it, and let's be happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, with Mayweather Pacquiao, for example, like, there was problems with both of them agreeing.
That's right.
Errol has had, my understanding is that Errol's, whatever his arrangements are with his people, with PBC and TGB and all that, that's been, you know, Showtime, whoever, that's been basically done for a while. Like, there hasn't been any issues. Again, it's like you said, they had to get Crawford comfortable with various elements of it. And you know what? To Terrence Crawford's credit, it may have taken a while, but as he said, you know what? That's done and now the fight's happening and that's all that matters. And it's going to be a great fight.
All right. So, good enough. Good enough there. We have some Ryan Garcia, speaking of him, out of the ring news, some back and forth with him right now, and Oscar De La Hoya, his promoter. Oscar is claiming that he's got a list of fighters he wants to meet with Ryan. He even put the name Manny Pacquiao back out there, which there was talk that Ryan Garcia would fight Manny Pacquiao over a year ago, year and a half ago or more. Okay, so what do you make of all of this? Because the soap opera, you even put it in your rundown, the soap opera continues on here. It seems like within a calendar year, within about a year, Ryan Garcia is at odds with Oscar De La Hoya about money, opponents, next fight, something. And here we are off the Tank Davis fight that it appears we're at odds again about what's next.
It's just like, unfortunately, it's like partially oil and water, partially like, let's say, you know, big brother, little brother, you know, where they're maybe like in a beef and an argument, a bullying, whatever it is. They just can't figure out a way to get on the same page. And Oscar, unfortunately, goes into the public domain and says certain things that probably are better left said privately between you and the fighter and the fighter's team. And when he makes a pronouncement that I'm meeting with Ryan Garcia on Tuesday, meaning 2 days ago as we tape this on Thursday, and then I speak to Ryan Garcia's representative, his advisor and lawyer, Guadalupe Valencia, and he basically laughs and says, we have no meeting set up. That's not true. We're not talking about opponents, and we have no meeting scheduled. I mean, it's one thing for them to have a contract with each other, and that's fine, but it takes two to tango if you're going to try to get along with each other, and they're just not in that moment right now. And a big part of this, and you know, you can laugh about it, but Ryan Garcia is still, and I don't even blame him, to be honest with you. He's upset that Oscar De La Hoya, his promoter, did not come to the news conference after his loss to Tank Davis, which many of us questioned at the time. Perfectly legitimate question. You know darn well if he had won the fight that he'd have been there. Bernard Hopkins also, for that matter, who's also part of Golden Boy Promotions, who did not come. But Oscar is, that's, you know, he's the logo. He's the guy that is the owner and the, mm-hmm. and the CEO and all that. And I think the problem that people have is that Oscar, when he made his social media video that was after that to address that problem, he said that his security told him that they needed to get out of the arena because he had death threats against him. Now, obviously, I don't think that that's a good thing. And if you truly have a death threat against you, not a good situation. And why anybody would put a death threat against Oscar, I'm not really sure. You know, for all of the issues Oscar has, my personal perception of Oscar, having known him, you know, better than just an average, reporter to the promoter and or former fighter, you know, Oscar at heart is like a decent human being also. But the thing is, he was at all the other Fight Week events. He was standing on a stage at the press, at the weigh-in outdoors, right in front of the arena on the Friday. No issues there. And then in terms of the press conference, if you had death threats, probably one of the safest places you could literally be after the fight is still in the T-Mobile, because they had cleared the arena of the public. And the only folks that were left there were probably a couple of hundred people that were your staff and people working the fight from the network and from PBC. But building staff, security, you know, janitorial staff, operations people, you know, who are just there doing their normal job. And what, like, you know, a couple hundred media people who are just trying to get their work done. So you were, in my opinion, you're perfectly safe standing on a stage in front of a bunch of big, bad media people. So that reason did not sit well with Ryan Garcia, and he's ticked off about it. And so they're in a tit for tat right now. And, you know, he wants to fight certain guys that are not with Golden Boy, that are not on DAZN. And, you know, this is going to become a problem because he wants to come back in the fall. His team says, we're not fighting Pacquiao. So, you know, Oscar hasn't, you know, he doesn't have anything signed with Manny. Manny's probably one of the hardest guys out there to deliver because their side is they don't drive an easy bargain either. So it's just headed for more trouble. I mean, it's, the saga continues. I'm actually, frankly, TJ, kind of surprised that it's reared its ugly head this quickly, because the fight with him and Tank was like barely a month ago. Usually after that magnitude of a fight, you know, okay, guys kind of disappears for a little while, maybe takes a, you know, goes on a 2 week vacation, chills out. But Ryan was literally down in Texas with Derek James making their deal, like within less than a week after the fight, about a week after the fight. And now they're already talking about other fights. Ryan's tweeted the guys he liked to fight. He mentioned Rolly Romero. He mentioned Isaac Pitbull Cruz. He mentioned Teofimo Lopez, should he be the victor against Josh Taylor coming up later in June. Unfortunately, it seems like at the moment, those three fights are probably all pipe dreams, or certainly not they wouldn't be easy to make any of those three, but we'll see what happens with them. But before he gets in the ring to fight anybody, he's going to have to get on the same page with his promoter, whether it's, who he's going to fight and on what platform he's going to fight and all the other stuff that goes into putting together these deals. So they got some issues to deal with between themselves before they can actually go forward and make a deal for a fight.
Well, we will see when that gets resolved. And again, there's a lot of history because there were squabbles before that he wasn't getting enough money. De La Hoya gave him more money, and then he backed out, at least on one occasion. What, summer of 2021, he backed out of a main event.
Two fights. I mean, one was the mental health issues. He took a little
correct.
Break. And then one, when he was ready to come back, he had a hand injury.
Correct. A hand injury. And then that delayed things.
That's the way it goes. That's not Oscar's fault. And that's not Ryan's fault.
There was a lot of talk, and we wrote about this on the side, and this is before you and I hooked up with whatever else, about him backing out of that fight that summer and what was really behind it. And I know, look, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole for another 15 minutes on this. Ryan has talked on the record about having mental health issues. about having suicidal thoughts. Nobody's going to make fun of that. Nobody is going to minimize that and say that it's not important. But I can understand from a business standpoint, Oscar De La Hoya realizes this is my meal ticket right now. I need this guy to be back in the ring this fall and on DAZN as part of my deal. So I can appreciate he wants to try to get something going there. And, you know, the public stuff about I want to fight Rolly Romero, I want to fight Teofimo Lopez, as you just said and alluded to, none of those are realistic right now because one's with PBC, one's with Top Rank. You got to go with what's realistic here because he signed with Golden Boy. So,
well, it's not that fighting a PBC fighter is not realistic. In the case of the Tank Davis fight, which they made, which was with a PBC fighter on Showtime, Tank was, and I hate the phrase, but it's the reality, he was the so-called A-side because he was the established fighter on pay-per-view. And it was really, from their point of view, was a total deal-breaker. And for Ryan, it wasn't. And Golden Boy and DAZN finally came around to it. But now if you're talking about Ryan taking on a Rolly Romero or a Pitbull Cruz, for example, two PBC guys, well, obviously Ryan's the A-side on that fight by a long shot, by 1,000,000%, by 10,000,000%. So it's one thing for Golden Boy and DAZN to, you know, suck it up and go and do the fight on the rival platform and make the match. Mm-hmm. It's an entirely different story to expect them to give in on a secondary type of opponent compared to Tank Davis when he's under contract to Golden Boy for the next couple of years. And there would be no reason for them to even think about allowing that. I mean, their business partner, what pays their bills largely, is that output deal they have with DAZN. And they're going to have to figure that out. So.
Yep.
You know, we'll have plenty of time to talk about this as it moves on. But right now, it's kind of a real mess, and hopefully they can get it worked out like adults.
And in wrapping it up, as you were just alluding to, it's not like he was going to be in the ring in June, July, or August anyway. You do have a lot of time to wrap it up. This is for the fall, right?
This is like October, November, but you know they're trying to get it squared away.
Okay, speaking of the fall, speaking of September, one more item, and then we're going to talk about the Clarissa Shields undisputed title fight that is coming for Saturday night in Detroit. David Benavidez, very interested in fighting Canelo Alvarez, who isn't, and supposedly they've made a massive lucrative offer to Canelo that they want this to be the fight in September, Mexican Independence Day weekend. Is there any real reason why we should take this as, hey, it's a sign that maybe this could happen, or is it just the case where they're trying everything to be the Canelo golden ticket on their end, Benavidez and his camp? What about it?
Well, I think it's possible it could happen. It's going to be up to whether Canelo wants to do the fight or not, because as we've discussed numerous times, Canelo Alvarez, he has plotted and planned his career for this exact reason. While he enjoys doing business with DAZN and Golden Boy, DAZN and Matchroom, mm-hmm. and has made a lot of money with them and has done pretty much he's done every single one of his fights since he parted with Golden Boy with Matchroom, with the one exception was in the order to get the fight for the undisputed super middleweight title, that man facing Caleb Plant, who had the fourth belt. And he did so by leaving Matchroom for one fight and fighting on, against a PBC fighter on Showtime pay-per-view. And so if he were to do a fight with David Benavidez, because they've made such a lucrative offer to him, that would probably be the same situation. So my understanding is that the offer that has been made by Samson Lukowicz, who is his promoter, who works with Al Haymon and PBC and has done so for a number of years. But he is David's promoter on paper, and he's been the guy that's had him, you know, for his entire career, that they've made an offer north of $50 million for Canelo Alvarez. And I clarified this, by the way, unless they're lying, which I don't think they are. It's not for fights that require options and this and that. This is a straightforward one fight offer. And they have to still, if you send a proposal, it's not like a done deal. You got to agree on other elements, whatever, about other things besides just the guaranteed money. You know, there's the small stuff like rooms and plane tickets. And then there's the larger things like how are we cutting up the gate, how are we splitting the revenue on foreign television, how are we cutting up the percentages on the actual pay-per-view revenue, et cetera. But the first thing someone's got to do is, you know, make the original offer. So they have done that. Eddie Reynoso, who is the person receiving this offer, because Canelo doesn't have a promoter. Eddie is the one that runs that business as the manager, as well as he's also the trainer, of course, claims, I guess, that he didn't get the offer. I talked to Samson Lukowicz like a little before we got on our video here to do our podcast. And I've known Samson for 25 years almost. I mean, when he says I sent him a text message, I sent it to him via WhatsApp and I sent it to him via email and laid out, you know, the proposal to get the ball rolling, and he claims he didn't get it, but I know he got it. I sent it to all these places. So I don't know what he's talking about. So if the two sides can't even agree on whether their offer was received, how are you going to move forward to try to negotiate it? So maybe it's just a little, like, you know, gamesmanship and the nonsense that goes on a lot of times in this business.
Sure.
But hopefully, you know, knowing Samson the way I do, I'm sure you know, they may not take the offer, but I believe it's probably legitimate offer. That's the fight that David Benavides and their side, PBC, would love to make.
Of course.
Canelo has been, for his own reasons, has been stuck on doing a rematch with Dimitri Bivol. I can tell you one thing, though, and you don't have to be an accountant or a economics major or anything along those lines, but I can tell you, and I would die on this hill, that a fight between Canelo Alvarez and David Benavides would gross tens of millions of dollars more than a fight between him and Bivol. And it's not a knock on Bivol, who I think is one of the best fighters in the entire sport. But just from the fan point of view, the ones who pay the bills, besides, because they buy the tickets and they buy the pay-per-view and they buy the t-shirts, and people want eyeballs, so sponsors gravitate towards that caliber of a fight, that fight would do way, way more business than a fight between Canelo and Dimitri Bivol. Now, Canelo's made hundreds of millions of dollars, so maybe he'd say, screw it, I'm going to take the fight that I want, not the fight that's necessarily the bigger money. Look, he left money on the table to go home and fight John Ryder and took a lot less money than it would have been had he fought a different opponent and done so in a place like Las Vegas. So, you know, at this moment in time, maybe it's not only about the money for Canelo Alvarez. But he also is the guy, Canelo Alvarez, that tells you 1,000 times, all the time, he wants to make the fights that the fans want to see. And again, nothing against Dimitri Bivol, but I dare say way, 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 way more fans are interested to see Canelo tangle up with David Benavides than they are to see a rematch with Dimitri Bivol. So the ball apparently in the Canelo Alvarez court, and let's see how they respond. But so far, the response has not been the best.
All right, let's move on. As we mentioned, it is the women's undisputed middleweight championship on the line in Detroit, Little Caesars Arena, Saturday night. Clarissa Shields makes her latest defense. It is a replacement opponent from about a week and a half ago. Maricela Cornejo is the opponent. Okay, so give me a little bit of insight into this one. Obviously, Clarissa is the story, the draw. This is in her region. She's from Flint, Michigan. She's fighting in Detroit as a headline fighter. It's on DAZN. So give me a little more about this, because this is the championship marquee fight of the weekend, Dan, here in the preview mode.
Yeah, I mean, I know that had to switch opponents. She was supposed to fight Hannah Gabriels, who has won world titles in 3 weight classes. That would have been a rematch of a fight that Clarissa won, the middleweight titles that were vacant back at the time that they first fought. And the hook, if you will, to the fight, because in the end, Clarissa actually won pretty handily in terms of the decision. But the one sort of selling point of the fight, the thing that they kept talking about, was that the only person ever in Clarissa's professional career, and she's now 13-0, as well as her amateur career, where she had, you know, what she was like 79-1 or something like that, or 75-1, with the one loss against Savannah Marshall, which she avenged in her last fight when she became the undisputed champion for the second time by winning back a belt that she already had but had given up, that Savannah subsequently won. And anyway, the selling point for Gabriels was, she knocked me down in round one, and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to knock her out now this time. She was dropped from that fight because she had a positive drug test for a banned substance. And so they got Maricela Cornejo on short notice. And while, yes, it is short notice because it was like a week ago, the reality is, according to Cornejo, as she's spoken about this weekend and her comments during the press conference and during the workouts, she was thrilled because she was training for a fight that was supposed to take place on June the 6th. And she was able to get out of that fight and get a much more lucrative opportunity to fight in terms of the money, as well as for the undisputed championship. So she says, I'm already in great shape. I was ready to go. And I've already been training. So this is just, I'm switching opponents the same way she is, but I've been ready, and she's anxious for the opportunity. Now, in the terms of Cornejo's experience, you know, she's been a pretty good fighter. She's got 5 losses. She's 16-5 with 6 knockouts. She's lost her three fights that she has lost have come in world championship fights. She's fought for middleweight titles and super middleweight titles. 2 of her losses are to Franchon Cruz DAZN, who is currently the undisputed champion at super middleweight, who, by the way, is the woman that when Clarissa turned professional and Franchon Cruz turned professional, they fought each other amazingly. I mean, two women that went on to become, you know, pound for pound level fighters faced off in a tremendous battle in a 4-rounder. I was actually at that fight. I was on the undercard I forget if it was the first fight or the second fight, but one of the two Andre Ward, Sergey Kovalev fights. Point is, Franchon Cruz is no joke, and Cornejo lost a super close decision to her in one fight, and then a little bit more of a lopsided decision in the second fight. But she's experienced against good quality opponents. She lost also in a world championship fight to Callie Reese, also a quality opponent. So my point is, Cornejo is not a bum. She's a quality fighter, contender in her own right. And as it turns out, and this is helpful from the standpoint of mandatories and all, is that she happens to be the mandatory or number one challenger in three of the four organizations for Claressa's title belt. So this is still, despite the change, and I mean when I say this, I actually think this is a better fight than that she fought Gabriels in the rematch, because she wiped out Gabriels just because of the knockdown. So I'm more interested personally in seeing her fight Cornejo as opposed to a rematch with Gabriels, even though, I mean, it's hard to say Shields is going to lose the fight. But this is really all about Claressa's going home. It's the first ever boxing match in the Little Caesars Arena, which is the big arena in downtown where the Red Wings play and where the Pistons play. So it's a first-class, you know, major league facility. Obviously, they're not going to have 18,000, but they expect a pretty strong, healthy, you know, crowd that maybe could approach 10,000, let's say, from what I've heard from the Claressa people. So this is the chance, basically, and I'm not trying to sell the fight. I'm just saying what the deal is here. You have Claressa Shields, who is undisputed at middleweight. I think anybody with a reasonable frame of mind would say she is the number one fighter in boxing, pound for pound, in the women's sport. And she's back in action, taking on a very reasonable challenger for her titles.
And Detroit's a tremendous fight town, going all the way back to Joe Louis and the arena being named after him, moving forward to the Kronk Gym and Thomas Hearns and all the Kronk fighters. Great history in Detroit. Let's see what kind of atmosphere there is there. We'll make predictions on this fight and also on the co-feature fight with Ardriel Holmes, who is in the co-feature bout just before this one as a junior middleweight in a contender fight. So we'll talk about those on the BetUS show coming Friday. Claressa is massively favored. I mean, I've seen as much as 45-1 on the BetUS line that she's supposed to win this fight.
But so ask yourself this question, TJ. You tell me, I can think of maybe one or two exceptions, who wouldn't she be almost double-digit favorite against?
Right, that's true, because so she's been that good and that dominant, yes.
If she fought a rematch against Franchon Cruz, for example, she would still be favored heavily. It wouldn't be like 10-1. It might be like, you know, 6 or 7-1, but she'd still be a heavy duty favorite against Franchon.
And I want to say, even fighting Savannah Marshall in England, she was still like 7-1. We'll have to look. Exactly. 7 or 8-1, something like that, so, to your point. So
the problem, it's really, there's a lot of good quality female boxers, you know, even in and around her weight class. It's that she's so superior technically and skill-wise and experience-wise, and she's just a winner, pure and simple. She is a winner. I mean, she won 2 Olympic gold medals. The one loss she had against Savannah as an amateur was a highly questionable decision when she was, like, I think 17 years old. So that's obviously been avenged in a good fight, a competitive fight, but I don't think anybody walked away from her matchup against Savannah in the pro fight that was in her most recent bout in the fall, thinking, like, okay, she didn't win that fight. Of course she won the fight. So this is not in any way an indictment on Hannah Gabriels, on Cornejo, on Franchon, or any of these gals that get in the ring and do their thing. It's just that you're talking about, you know, if we refer to fighters like Dimitri Bivol and Naoya Inoue and Terrence Crawford or Errol Spence, you know, any of the men that we view as potential number one pound for pound, in women's boxing, there's really no argument, in my opinion. She is number one pound for pound, Claressa Shields. And again, it's not a knock on the other fine fighters out there. You know, you could talk about whether it's Chantel Cameron with the big win, or it's Katie Taylor, or it's Baumgartner, or any of the other, you know, tremendous fighters that, you know, Amanda Serrano, whoever. Mm-hmm. Russell Shields is the number one fighter in boxing.
Maybe Katie Taylor had the stronger argument until she lost a couple of weeks ago in Ireland. So we'll see. Claressa hasn't been beaten yet. So
the other thing about Claressa, by the way, is also Katie, she lost when she went up in weight, but she's still obviously a dominator at 135. But part of the definition of pound for pound is, what if you were fighting, you know, people that were all the same weight class, but in the reality, you can go up and down. So she proved that she had trouble going up to 140 to do business. Claressa is the only woman to be undisputed in 2 weight classes. And she's actually been a unified champion in 3 weight classes, because she's currently undisputed at 160. She formerly was the undisputed at 154 till she moved up. And when she first started her career, she had unified I believe it was three of the titles. Maybe it was just two, but it was at least two of the titles at super middleweight. So she's done it up and down the scale. And I mean, you know, until further notice, she's the best female boxer out there. And as much experience and as good as she's fought in previous fights, Corneo's in a lot of trouble on Saturday. That's the bottom line.
All right. So there we go with a little preview mode there, a little more news, then some nostalgia, and then we're done here on the podcast. All right, don't snicker at me. Tim Zhu. We get news from Australia. You're snickering. Tim Zhu injured, and not a run-of-the-mill injury. This is – so you were talking about Hannah Gabriels is not in this fight with Clarissa Shields, and you laid it out beautifully that, that she was using a cream on a wound on her dog after surgery, and that the cream may have gotten on her fingers, on her hand, and in her system. And I joked with you and said, not only the dog ate my homework, but the dog failed my VADA test, if that's the excuse and that's what's to be believed. Now we got Tim Zhu's fight with Carlos Ocampo scheduled to be in Australia in the middle of this month in jeopardy because Zhu got bit by a dog on his right forearm, and not just a little nip or a little nick. This was a significant dog bite that is called into question about whether this fight can go on. Tell me more about your reporting on this. Because you were texting me and you're like, okay, everything looks like it should be good. And I just sent back one word, rabies, with an exclamation point. He got bit by a dog, Dan Rayfield. Give me more.
He, according to his team, who I was in contact with, he was attending like a barbecue or some kind of social gathering. I mean, he's in training camp, but guys still, you know, they do unwind a little bit after a hard day at the gym, I guess. And he was just coincidentally was just charged by a dog that was there at this gathering. And the dog bit him, as you mentioned, on the right forearm. And it was bad enough where he actually had to have like some kind of minor surgery on the wound and get stitched up. And so before they can give him the all clear, and maybe it's already happened, I'm not sure, because their timing is so much different than us. But they're waiting, and they were thinking it would be this week that they would know more particular, you know, make sure the wound is healing properly, that the stitches are okay, that there's no infection. And then the doctors would have to sign off on it. But, you know, as of when it first happened, you know, a few days ago, there is concern, legitimately so, that maybe he would have to sit out the fight. Now, Tim has said apparently he wants to, you know, according to his people, he says, I want to fight. And that's fine. You know, he's a fighter. But in the end, it's going to be up to his handlers and obviously more importantly to the medical professionals and to the commission folks that handle such events in Australia. So hopefully he's okay and well enough to go through with the fight. If he can't, I mean, he did just fight recently. He's still waiting on Charlo to get better and to have his hand healed. So if he has to miss a fight for an injury also, it's, I don't think, the end of the world. But ideally, he'll get a chance to fight. You got a good show there with some guys on the undercard. You know, you never like to see shows get canceled because while it certainly impacts fighters in the main event, people don't think about all the, you know, the other, you know, maybe 10 fighters or more that are on the undercard that lose out on their opportunity to do their job and to get paid. And they've gone through training camps. So hopefully Tim can fight. But yeah, it is a very freakish injury, as somebody suggested to me. So Tim Zhu, he's really got dog in him, doesn't he?
Or he had the dog on him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
For sure. And there was probably a rabies shot, you would have to think, just to be precautionary, as well as antibiotics and other things. And we'll see. And as we release this podcast, and Thursday becomes Friday and Friday becomes Saturday, hopefully we get good news that he's healing up, and maybe it's after the weekend that he's healing up. And that is a June 17th in the U.S., June 18th, correct, on Sunday in Australia. The only other thing, and we don't have to spend 10 minutes on this, the only other thing I was thinking is if he is somehow going to be healthier a week later, I know that would be somewhat chaotic to have it maybe on Showtime, which they intend to show it, but the Australian TV arm would probably wait. The other fighters, some may wait, some may not on the undercard, but if they had to wait a week because of this to make sure that he's fully healthy, wouldn't that hypothetically, I'm not saying it is, wouldn't it hypothetically be an option for the next week or maybe 2 weeks later in June? I don't know that it goes much beyond 2 weeks.
Yeah, but
if he needed a week, hypothetically, maybe that could happen. We don't know. We're not reporting that.
I'm not sure what the status of what Showtime would do or what the Australia pay-per-view. But one thing for sure is that the money that will come from the show, from the pay-per-view in Australia, is, I'm sure, more than the money that Showtime is paying. So that's who they would have to answer to first. The ideal thing is, like, hopefully he's either okay and they can go through with the fight as scheduled, or if they have to postpone it for a little bit or cancel it outright, you know, that would be unfortunate, but it may be one of the possibilities. So hopefully, like I said, hopefully he's okay. And I'll say this also, I've written countless stories and things about fights that have been postponed or canceled for different injuries. And I must say that this is my first in terms of a dog bite being one of them. The one that springs to mind, remember, Zab Judah once had to call off a fight because he fell through a glass door in a shower. Alexander
Povetkin cut his hand. Right.
So he had some cuts and the fight was called off. There was one fight years ago, and I don't remember who the opponent was, where it was, I believe it was Alexander Povetkin, the heavyweight, was involved in what was a pretty big fight at the time. They had to call off the fight because he tripped over a tree root while he was out doing road work and messed up his like ankle or his knee or something.
Yep.
But I've heard like lots of weird reasons for fights being postponed. Getting bit by a dog is the first one. The first time I've heard that.
And just one more time, this is not an insignificant dog bite. He had over 20 stitches to close up the gash of what happened. So it's significant. And hopefully over the course of the next couple of days, 3 days, 4 days, whatever, we'll get good news. So keep it locked in on Dan's Substack. Maybe we'll have good news by the time we do the Fight Freaks Unite recap coming off the weekend that this fight is a go-ahead for a couple of weeks from now and can happen in Australia. All right, what else? Speaking of Australia, George Kambosos, that fight is official for later this year. What other news items do we need before we do some nostalgia and we're done?
Well, with the George Kambosos fight, we've reported about this, but they made it official today. He is returning, as I've mentioned in previous notebooks and on this podcast, I believe. He's fighting Maxie Hughes in IBF Eliminator for number two, but it's been officially announced. Remember, we'd already discussed that he signed a contract extension with Lou DiBella, and now he's also going to be co-promoted by Top Rank. He is a very good name in the lightweight division, former unified champion. So this is his first fight under that new agreement. It will be Maxie Hughes. It will take place in Shawnee, Oklahoma. It will headline the July 22nd Top Rank ESPN event, and they'll fight in an opportunity to move a step closer to a mandatory position. Remember, with Devin Haney still undetermined whether he's going to remain as a lightweight or go to 140, if he does go to 140, all these belts are going to become vacant, and it's going to put him or Maxie Hughes, the winner, to fight for that vacant title against the number one contender, who I'm not sure off the top of my head who it is. But in any event, so that's the card that was the main event that was announced. And then on the undercard, they also announced the lightweight prospect, the number one prospect in the sport, in my opinion, because I picked him as the 2022 prospect of the year, is Keyshawn Davis, the Olympic silver medal winner, 8-0 with 6 knockouts. He will be in a 10-rounder in the co-feature. He'll take on the former European champion from Belgium, Francisco Patera, 28-3 with 10 knockouts. Pretty solid opponent for this stage of his career. And that's not a bad midsummer show. A nice main event with some stakes. Maxie Hughes has been on a great winning streak and has pulled some upsets. Fearless about taking on Kambosos. They're doing it on neutral territory. So one guy's from Australia, one guy's from the UK. They'll fight in Oklahoma. And you got Keyshawn, who's taking on a reputable guy, who I think is one of the, if not the very best prospect in the sport. So nice doubleheader there. And I'll be watching.
All right. And the WBA has announced that they have a couple of fights that they have ordered as well. Real quick on those.
So we saw Lee Wood regain the WBA featherweight title last week. He got the pretty lopsided victory over Mauricio Lara to avenge his knockout loss. And we heard a lot of talk about after the fight, like he wants to fight Josh Warrington. That would be a huge fight for the UK. Warrington is a former IBF champion. They're both with Matchroom, and that's the fight that Eddie Hearn has wanted to do. And that's not to say that they can't perhaps still work it out, but there's a fighter, an excellent fighter, who most people have not heard of. He's from Uzbekistan. I have watched this kid, and let me tell you, as God is my witness, this guy can fight. He's a real, legit guy, and I might even make him the favorite over Lee Wood. But his name is Odabek Kalmatov, and he just won an elimination fight over the undefeated Thomas Patrick Ward, who was like 30-0 when they fought each other, and he absolutely destroyed him. He's a real guy. He's only got about 11 or 12 pro fights, but he was one of these top amateurs that didn't need a lot of seasoning in the pros. But in any event, he is, by winning that fight over Thomas Patrick Ward, put him in the number one position. And the WBA, quite a while ago when that happened, ordered that he would be able to be the mandatory to face the winner of the rematch between Lara and Wood, which they approved as instead of the mandatory. So they already had given essentially an exception to doing the mandatory. So they put out their letter this week saying they have 30 days to negotiate the Kalmatov camp and the Lee Wood camp. To negotiate a deal, or they'll call a purse bid. But the fight, because obviously Lee just fought. It's not like he's going back in the training camp tomorrow. The point is, though, they say the fight can happen no later than September 26th. So it's always possible that sides can work out agreements. And, if nobody is aggrieved, that they can move on and do something else. So it wouldn't shock me, frankly, if somehow the Lee Wood Kalmatov fight was put on hold and they did allow that to happen if he's willing to take some kind of step aside. But the point is, they are following their rules. This was not a surprise. Everybody knew it before the Mauricio Lara fight. The Kolmatov was next in line. So they ordered that fight. And the other fight that they ordered was in the 140-pound weight class. Same situation, you know, 30 days to make a deal, otherwise a purse bid. Again, possibilities exist, I suppose, depending on how things are organized and arranged and negotiated, that perhaps this might wait. But in any event, they ordered Rolly Romero, who has got the WBA's 140-pound title, as terrible as a situation as that was with right. the one against Barroso, with that horrendous stoppage.
I got five horrendouses there.
There you go. But again, this was not something that was unknown. They said this before the fight, so they're not springing this. They're not following their rules that they've ordered him to fight the mandatory, which is O'Hara Davies. So that fight was ordered also. Again, maybe they can do a rematch with Barroso. Maybe he'll get Ryan Garcia, the fight that Ryan has been asking for, etc. But the bottom line is, the WBA has followed their rules and ordered these two mandatories. And I've seen some people, the WBA, they're standing in the way of this fight. You know, of course they're ordering that. They didn't order a Barroso rematch. And my perspective is, look, you know, you're looking at the guy that's been the number one critic of the WBA, maybe in the history of critics of the WBA. I mean, I wrote a column once where I called for their abolition and to make the world a safer, right. better place.
And have consistently referred to them as the wretched WBA. Continue.
So my point was very simple. Had they allowed him to do a rematch with Barroso and denied the mandatory they already ordered against O'Hara Davis, you'd have the same people bitching and moaning that they're allowing O'Hara Davis to do the mandatory and not ordering the rematch. If the shoe was on the other foot and they reversed that scenario, they would complain about the opposite. Like, the WBA was in a situation where they really can't win. It's sort of like, pick the, you know, what's the least worst option, I guess, in some sense. The choice where, you know, do we order the Barroso rematch, which makes sense based on how he got fucked so hard in that fight by Tony Weeks, or do we go through with what we already said was the case and follow through on our rules and order the O'Hara Davies mandatory? So I think they're doing the best they can in this situation. In an ideal world, you know, I'd like to see, if they have to go down this road, let that Rolly fight against Davies happen, and then let Barroso get a shot at the winner. But then again, you know, if Rolly somehow had the opportunity with the title at stake to fight Ryan Garcia, I mean, again, he is coming off a loss, but it's obviously a big money fight for everybody involved. I mean, there's really no good solution, but they're following their rules. And anybody yes. that's saying that they're ordering the Davies fight for Rolly instead of the Barroso rematch, if they had ordered the Barroso rematch and denied Davies, you'd have some segment of people that would bitch that they violated their rules by screwing their mandatory. So you can't have it both ways.
I understand.
And, you know, this
pick a lane, like we like to say, pick a lane.
If we're in WWE, you can do a triple threat match and have all three in the ring at the same time. You can't do that in a professional.
That is not happening. We can tell you about things that could happen. We will definitely tell you that is not happening.
So that's the
that is the point. All right. So some good stuff there on the news. Okay. Nostalgia. Obviously, Saturday we commemorate the passing of Muhammad Ali. That was 7 years ago that Ali passed away from complications with Parkinson's and post fight. The greatest, simply the greatest. And I love going back, not only in reliving his fights, but going back and reliving all the interviews and the conversation and all of the different stuff that was out there from Muhammad. Do you know this, that Muhammad Ali actually played Muhammad Ali in the Muhammad Ali movie in the late 70s, the made-for-TV movie? A lot of people don't realize that. He acted as Muhammad Ali playing Muhammad Ali.
Who could play him better than himself?
Yes, of course. It's kind of like...
did a good job in the movie, but it's still not the same.
Who else was going to win that in the casting? Besides Muhammad Ali, once Muhammad Ali decided he was going to go and try out for the part, who else is going to win that? But the greatest passed away June 3rd of 2016, 7 years ago. And we cannot overstate enough for the younger generation and the younger fight fans. I mean, I'm talking to you, Gen Z. I'm talking to you that all think that boxing started in 2008. Muhammad Ali was the biggest of the biggest deals for the better part of 15 years, from the mid 60s till about 1980. He was the biggest worldwide of deals in sports.
A lot of it was more than just boxing. It was because all the things Warren did outside the ring.
He was the greatest and should always be revered as the greatest.
I will tell people if there's been so much written and said about Ali, there's been so many films about him, documentaries done about him, about certain fights, certain parts of his life. But if you're looking for the the deepest dive of the overall history of this man's life, not just like the Foreman fight or the Frazier fight or whatever. I can't recommend highly enough the PBS documentary that aired, I believe it was last year, maybe it was the year before, that Ken Burns did, who's mm-hmm. the great American documentary maker, who's done other boxing-related documentaries. He did a fantastic documentary on Jack Johnson, which I find myself watching, probably a couple times a year. But the Ali doc, which is, I think it's about 8 hours long altogether, but it flies by. It is just, it to me, and I'm a slightly friendly with Ken Burns, having met him a few times when he was doing other projects. So I actually messaged him after I watched Ali, and I told him, I said, listen, I mean, you've done a lot of great docs, baseball, Civil War, you can name 1,000 things that he's done. The Ali, and I've seen millions of Ali docs, it's the best one, period. Not even close. I mean, it's so beautifully done. It hits all the right notes. It didn't really cut too much out or give too much short shrift. Because when you're doing this magnitude of a life with this many things, it's hard to really treat everything fairly and get everything in. But they had the right interviews. They had the right pacing. It covered the big events, some of the smaller things. They had great archival footage. They had the cooperation from members of Ali's family. They had the cooperation from Bob Arum, who obviously was the promoter for, you know, something like 27 of Ali's fights and did, you know, a huge amount of business with him. And was there, you know, front row for all these events. So he knew a lot of what was going on in the background. Anyway, I encourage you to watch it. But yeah, his death was, when it happened, it wasn't just any old great sports icon passing away. He was a global icon from far more than just his boxing career. But boxing is what made him his name as an Olympic gold medal winner, as the first ever three-time heavyweight world champion, some of the biggest fights in the history of boxing. I mean, there's so many, you know, whether it's the Liston fights or it's the three Joe Frazier fights or the Rumble in the Jungle, big giant upset against George Foreman, the return to win the title the third time when he revenged the loss to Leon Spinks, and the trilogy with Kenny Norton. I mean, he's just got one huge fight after another. Floyd Patterson, and, you know, just pick a guy. I mean, he fought everybody. Larry Holmes, which was obviously not a memorable one if you're an Ali fan, but certainly an important fight in the history of boxing. And even up to the last fight he ever had, against Trevor Burbick, who, you know, it's interesting. Trevor Burbick is the link between Ali and Tyson, because he defeated Ali in the last fight of Ali's career, went on to become the WBC's heavyweight champion, and then who took the title from Burbick. So if you're playing the 6 degrees of separation, how do you draw the line back? You know, Tyson beat Burbick, and Burbick beat Ali, and Ali beat, you know, Foreman, and so on and so forth. So it's, you know, he's that important link to those two eras. But yeah, I mean, I'll talk a little bit about the fact that on that anniversary when Muhammad passed in 2016, when it happened, I was in California covering the WBC junior lightweight championship fight between the then champion Francisco Vargas and Orlando Salido, who had also had a title in that weight division. And they were fighting in what was then the StubHub Center. And so obviously I was around a lot of boxing people when the word came that Muhammad had passed. This was the night before the fight. When I went to the fight, that was obviously a huge deal. The two fighters, you know, they honored Ali. I don't remember which one, but I think one of them was wearing like an Ali shirt coming into the ring. There was the moment of silence and the ringing of the 10 bells for Ali in the stadium that night that I can still feel like the chills you got, because people were so respectful and so not like happy that he had passed, of course, but they honored him with the cheers were just like outlandishly loud. And then, not to say this wouldn't have happened anyway, because the way that Francisco Vargas and Orlando Salido fight are all action type warriors, but they went out there and they laid it all on the line. And, you know, they said it was partly in their tributes to Ali to put on a great fight, but they tore each other up. It was a draw. And it turned out to be, at least from my opinion, it was the 2016 fight of the year. They put on an absolutely sensational battle. Francisco Vargas retained the title. Salido obviously did not win the title, but fantastic draw. Being there, I've covered several fights in the tennis stadium there in Carson, where they've had so many great matchups. But that was a truly special night because of the feeling in the crowd as everybody honored Muhammad Ali, and then these two great warriors went out there and gave a fight worthy of the greatest Muhammad Ali fight, a Frazier Ali kind of fight, and it was very much of an unforgettable experience to be there on the night after Muhammad Ali passed.
Some good nostalgia and tying it in. And by the way, If we're going with the nostalgia, also, as we release the podcast for Saturday, June the 4th, you can go backwards to Miguel Cotto fighting at Yankee Stadium. And you were there ringside that night as well. Some more nostalgia with Cotto and Yuri Foreman, right?
Yeah, so that was a fight that's at what is now the Yankee Stadium, across the street from the former stadium that they had torn down, but still Yankee Stadium, home of my New York Yankees, my favorite team. They hadn't had a fight at Yankee Stadium when Miguel and Yuri Foreman fought that fight in 2010. It was the first fight to take place at Yankee Stadium. Obviously, one I'm going to mention was at the stadium that was built, that was torn down across the street. That was one of the fights between Muhammad Ali and Kenny Norton that took place in 1976 at Yankee Stadium. So it had been 34 years since there had been a boxing event in the stadium. Top Rank put that on. Miguel, of course, was a huge draw among the Puerto Rican community in New York. They drew a gargantuan crowd for a boxing match, over 30,000 at Yankee Stadium. They set the ring up basically behind second base, sort of in like the outfield. So where we were sitting in terms of some of the seats in the press area, we were like basically in center field, but looking at, I guess, what would be the first base railing in the outfield with the third base railing behind us. And it was a tremendous atmosphere, a little drizzly that night. So kind of a weird sort of atmosphere from that standpoint. Yuri Foreman was the WBA champion at 154 pounds. Remember Miguel, he had done a gallant and valiant effort against Manny Pacquiao, but lost his welterweight title by knockout in his previous fight. When that was over with, he decided to move up in weight. And in his first fight, he got a shot at Yuri Foreman, who was also with Top Rank. And they made a big event. And, you know, Aaron promoted that Ali-Norton fight that was at Yankee Stadium. He also promoted this Miguel Cotto-Yuri Foreman fight. And it turned out to be like quite an event. I mean, it maybe not wasn't fight of the year, but there were certainly some memorable moments. If you were there, you remember Yuri Foreman had suffered a knee injury during the fight. And the corner tried to stop the fight by throwing in the towel. And Arthur Mercanti was the referee. He did not accept it. And the phraseology that he used, come on, suck it up, champ. I mean, I don't think that was appropriate. If the corner was stopping the fight, you stop the fight. But nonetheless, Yuri got up and showed bravery and heart. He ultimately got stopped because of the knee. And Miguel Cotto ended up winning the title at 154 pounds on his way to becoming the first ever Puerto Rican male boxer to win world championships in four different weight classes. He had been the champion at 140. Obviously, he had done so at 147, which he then lost to Manny Pacquiao. He then won this WBA title against Yuri Foreman. He would go on to become the middleweight champion, the lineal middleweight champion to boot, against Sergio Martinez. But that was a very big crowning moment for Miguel to win that title in that kind of venue, on that kind of night, with that kind of crowd and that kind of atmosphere in his, you know, basically what was his city, you know, at a bring Yankee Stadium back into boxing, which had hosted, by the way, something like 46 previous fights before Miguel and Yuri Foreman. Maybe that was the 46th fight, but they had hosted numerous fights in buildings that were called Yankee Stadium through the years that hosted some very big fights. Some of the
Rocky Marciano, Joe Louis, sure. Just some of the names that obviously headlined among others that headlined at Yankee Stadium.
That was quite enough. Yeah, I mean, listen, as a New York Yankee fan, for me to be able to go.
I was going to go there. When you walked in there to that setup, you had to have a moment where you're going, wow, almost like a fan. Wow, this is really cool. There's 30,000 people here and this is Yankee Stadium, right?
So I have been to what is now I had been to old Yankee Stadium just as a fan many times. And I'd actually even been there as a journalist before in my former pre-boxing life. So I, you know, as a lifelong Yankee fan, that was a thrill to go cover a game there. And also obviously I've been there many times for ball games just as a fan with friends and family. I've been to the World Series there and that sort of thing. So, but I've now been to games at what is now New Yankee Stadium. But my first time being in New Yankee Stadium wasn't for a baseball game. It was actually for the boxing event. So when I got there, it was like I was like thrilled. So I'll tell you a little funny thing about that. During the undercard, there was a break, and we're like literally sitting on our chairs at the press area in the outfield. And you could like walk back where the media area was or where the backstage stuff was. You kind of walk behind yourself into there was like an open gate. You could go onto the concourse and you could like go to the press room or, you know, go to the bathroom or get a soda or whatever. Right next to Monument Park in Yankee Stadium, which if you're familiar, it's where the Yankees have their statues and the retired numbers for all the great former Yankees, you know, from Babe Ruth to Don Mattingly and now Derek Jeter and all the greats in between. Anyway, I took a 20 minutes when there was nothing going on, or maybe there was some crappy undercard fight that I didn't give a shit about. And I literally went into Monument Park, which was open. I wasn't like, you know, doing anything that was against the rules. And I was literally like by myself in Monument Park. And I spent like 20 minutes just going through it. I took pictures of like, you know, Reggie Jackson's plaque and Babe Ruth's statue. And
Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle.
Absolutely. Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, all the great Yankees. And that was a blast, because if you go there as a civilian to a game and you want to get in to take the tour, you got to wait online for a long time and there's a shitload of people in there. I basically had Monument Park to myself and was able to hang out there and just enjoy myself. By the way, another thing about that was
one of the because you are who you are. Yes.
No, it's because I'm a Yankee fan and it happened to be open when I went back to take a piss.
I love that.
Like my wife does not go to a lot of boxing matches. I mean, you know, she's been a couple times over the years, but I forget what the reason was, but she was in New York with me that part of that week. And she and my mother-in-law, who passed away a few years after that, but my mother-in-law, who was my old boxing fan, my wife and my mother-in-law were at that fight also and had a great time.
Wow. Yankee Stadium, June 4th, 2010, Miguel Cotto. All right, I'm just going to piggyback for a quick 60-second story that I had a brush with Cotto, never covered any of his fights, watched them on TV, obviously. 2006, 4 years before this, March of 2006, the first World Baseball Classic was taking place, which, again, this is something that they do about every 3 or 4 years where all the countries play. This was the first one. The United States plays, Mexico plays, all the Caribbean countries, Japan plays, Korea plays, even Australia, et cetera. Like Europe is about the only one that doesn't really participate as much, although I think England had a team this year in the World Baseball Classic. So anyway, the World Baseball Classic had different venues in the early rounds, Rayfield. One of the venues was in San Juan, Puerto Rico. So I'm there doing the baseball play-by-play for XM Satellite Radio prior to the merger with Sirius.
I was wondering where you're going with that.
Okay, so I'm there to do play-by-play. We go to a restaurant for lunch in San Juan as a crew with my color commentator, the engineer, the translator, the producer. There's about five of us. We are seated at a restaurant, and I'll even give the name, called El Che in San Juan. Okay. And all of a sudden, Miguel Cotto and Entourage come into the restaurant, about six or seven of them, including his wife, and sit down right next to us. And my engineer, who's Puerto Rican, and the translator, capital FLIPPED, flipped out. Because my man Cotto, in his heyday, was sitting right next to us in the restaurant. So all I am saying to you is you have had numerous brushes with all these greats, including Cotto or whomever. I don't have a boxing brush with Cotto, but I got a San Juan, Puerto Rico lunch brush with Miguel Cotto in 2006. I piggyback on your nostalgia.
I can't say I've had a brush with Cotto. I covered his entire career. I covered, right. I think, I mean, off the top of my head, I want to say that I was ringside for about 25 or 26 Miguel Cotto fights, including in Puerto Rico and including most of
the world. Can't overstate, and I know you echo this, how big of a legend in Puerto Rico he still is. He still is right now in 2023.
I know Miguel had the public persona as being very stoic and maybe not with the greatest personality. But again, I'm not his best friend, but you know, you get to know him over the time. You know, I remember when I showed up in Puerto Rico and I was there with Tim Smith, who at the time was the New York Daily News boxing reporter. Now currently he's the vice president of communications for Heyman Boxing and works with PBC, but he was still writing at the Daily News, and the two of us, you know, had traveled to come to the fight, and Miguel knew us from covering so many of his other fights. I feel like when we went up to him after like the press conference and he realized that we were there to cover him, like, I think he was genuinely touched that we had traveled all this way to have to cover his fight, which was not a mega fight. He was fighting, I remember who it was, to be honest with you, the opponent that night, but he defended his title in Puerto Rico. And he's just, again, I told you about the stoic sort of personality that maybe comes off to the public. But when you get to know him a little bit, Miguel was a very thoughtful and friendly guy. Later on, he kind of loosened up a little bit, got a little bit more of a sense of humor about him. And again, just a good, decent human being. I said that same explanation when I described the personality of Errol Spence. Miguel Cotto, very good, decent guy.
All right.
And a joy, by the way, an absolute thrill and joy to cover. Miguel gave the fans more, I think, bang for their buck entertainment wise than just about any fighter of modern vintage, with a few exceptions. So, but he was always a guy that gave everything he had.
I think we've given everything that we could have here on this preview. You've gotten lots of nostalgia, lots of news. Clarissa Shields, again, women's undisputed middleweight title fight Saturday night. My friend, I think we're good. We'll be back on the BetUS show coming Friday, 1 Eastern time, depending on when you're hearing us. Watch us live on the BetUS platforms, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, live at 1 Eastern. We'll do some handicapping. We'll have some other give and take. Hey, we'll answer your questions live as well on BetUS. If you catch the show later on Friday or on Saturday or in segment form, the show is always live at 1 Eastern time on Fridays through BetUS TV. And whatever happens, as we like to say in closing, we're back to recap it Sunday night into Monday on the Fight Freaks Unite recap. With that, my friend, have a great weekend, the first weekend of June. And we'll be back at this off the weekend on this very podcast feed with the recap podcast. Dan Rayfield, anything else?
No, you bet. We'll see you on the BetUS show tomorrow, and then we'll do the recap on Sunday. I look forward to it.
Good enough on that. There he is, our insider, Dan Rayfield. Again, find him on the Fight Freaks Unite Substack. Again, rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get podcasts. Big Fight Weekend podcast feed. We love that. The audience continues to grow and grow. For now, we are good. We'll see what happens this weekend with Shields' title defense and more. We're back to recap it off the weekend here as part of the Big Fight Weekend podcast feed. Bye.